This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
When I'm training for an ultra marathon, anywhere from 100 to 120 miles a week would be in my training cycle. Lots of miles.
You sold something like 250,000 books.
I'm the editorial director at Entrepreneur.com and your host, Dan Bova. Hi, I'm Dan Bova, editorial director of Entrepreneur.com, and welcome to How Success Happens, the podcast launched by Linda Lucina here at Entrepreneur. So in the coming weeks, you'll be hearing from a variety of Entrepreneur staffers as we sit down with all kinds of innovators, food entrepreneurs, tech geniuses, book authors, Navy SEALs, all with the goal of gaining insights into how success happens. So today's episode is going to be a little different in that it was never actually intended to be a podcast. About a year ago, I recorded an interview with actor and comedian Kumail Nanjiani for Entrepreneur Magazine. So this was just as the fourth season of his great HBO show Silicon Valley was about to premiere, and just as The Big Sick, the movie he co-wrote with his wife Emily Gordon about their relationship, that was just starting to get major buzz at the Sundance Film Festival. Well, you probably know that since that interview, Kumail and Emily's film went huge. Among other things, it won Best Comedy at the Critics' Choice Awards. It won Best First Screenplay at the Film Independent Spirit Awards. It was nominated for Best Original Screenplay at the Academy Awards. So yeah, you could say it had some degree of success, right? So what follows is the recording of my conversation with Kumail pretty much in its entirety. To be clear, this wasn't recorded to be a podcast, so I don't have the whole "this is a podcast" gravitas to my voice going on. But the conversation was so fun and so much of it wound up on the cutting room floor for the print version that we thought it'd be fun to run here. He talks about productivity, his working process with his wife Emily, the tolerance for risk that performers and entrepreneurs have to have, and of course, He-Man. We talked a lot about He-Man. So I hope you find it as fun and insightful as I did. Enjoy. But first, a word from our sponsor. Hey, this is Dan Bova, editorial director of Entrepreneur.com. Here's a crazy statistic. More than one quarter of all Americans say they'd start their own business in the next year if they could, but only a fraction of those actually do it. Why? Well, because taking that leap can be scary. So luckily, there's Weebly. Weebly is the easiest way to create an incredible looking website. But more importantly, it comes with a whole bunch of tools to help you sell your products, process payment, manage inventory, create marketing campaigns, and grow your brand. And because Weebly's mission is to help turn people's great ideas into successful businesses, they've built an incredible support team. If you have a question, just pick up the phone to talk to a customer success expert. No scripts, no robots, just a friendly human who can help you do what needs doing. So if you've got a product or idea you want to share with the world, check out Weebly. You can have a beautiful, powerful online store up and running in a matter of hours. And because you listen to this podcast, you can visit Weebly.com/HSH and get 15% off your first purchase. Don't just build a beautiful website, build a successful online business with Weebly. Hey, Kumail, it's Dan Bova at Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for talking with us. This is awesome.
Oh, thank you for talking to me.
I mean, this better be awesome.
Yeah, I think you have to write it and make me sound smart and interesting.
Okay.
It's all on you.
I hate to jump right into it, but I feel like there's some breaking news that I can't sit on for another second. You've just tweeted, "I'm done with the phrase grilled to perfection." Do you care to comment?
I just hate it. They always say that, and I'm like, you know what? I'll be the judge of that. Don't tell me it's perfect. You can just throw that around.
So season four of your very funny show, is that grilled to perfection? Are you confident? Can you make that claim right now?
This actually will be grilled to perfection.
Yeah. Okay.
It'll be fried to a golden brown.
Fantastic. Well,
congratulations with the show and your movie, which sounds pretty amazing. I can't wait to see that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we actually just got back from doing the final touches on the sound mix, because we showed it at Sundance to like these big like 1,300 people audiences, you know?
Yeah.
And we just exposed some like little sound tweaks that needed to be done. So I think now I'm actually done with the movie, at least my part of it.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. That's very cool. So, I'll get into that in a minute. When you were first starting off with Silicon, did you guys do a lot of research? Did you hang out at these accelerators? Did you go to any of these campuses?
They went more than we did. I read a bunch of articles about it, and I have friends who are in the tech world, so mm-hmm. I spoke with them about it. I had no idea. I feel like when we were doing our pilot, people outside of Silicon Valley weren't as aware of sort of that like ecosystem. And then in the last 4 years, people have become hyper aware, you know, like people know who all these like big VC names, like they know like the people who are just celebrities in Silicon Valley are not celebrities.
Right, right.
All over the world, like Peter Thiel and stuff, of course, like nobody knew who that guy was.
Right.
Just a few months ago outside of Silicon Valley. So I think, they go and they visit like, you know, all these different campuses and stuff. We don't go, but we've gone for events there. Like we do premieres there and stuff. So we
okay.
get to meet a lot of the people that we're supposed to be making fun of.
Right. So do they appreciate, your look at them, or, do you ever have any odd, reactions?
They never think it's about them specifically. They always think it's about the people around them. They're
yeah.
like, oh, yeah, you guys are so right. These people are crazy. And I'm kind of like, no, you're crazy. It's the best, because nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
Right,
so
right.
it's kind of perfect. Nobody's offended, but everybody thinks it's accurate.
That's hilarious. And how would you compare that world to kind of like the Hollywood world in terms of being self-aware?
They're actually similar in that they're both, you know, people who are celebrities. And I feel like the Silicon Valley people have become more celebrities, like normal celebrities.
Right.
You know, whenever you're like, I think it's hard to stay in touch with the world when you're really, really well-regarded in any specific world. So I think the egos in Hollywood and the egos in Silicon Valley are probably quite similar.
I'm sensing quite a big ego from you just from this phone call.
Yeah, no, I straddle the line, so I get the best of both worlds. I get to be a Hollywood elite and a Silicon Valley
right.
tech elite.
What's the most Hollywood thing about you? Do you have a nice pool, or do you always wear sunglasses? Like, what's your thing?
I will say I got like really into like coffee. Like, you know, when you go and it's pour over. Where do you live?
New York.
Okay, so it's not the pour over coffee stuff. I have a theory that it's not as big in New York because everybody's in a rush and they just want to go and get coffee and leave.
Right.
Here we have time to wait 10 minutes for them to make one cup of coffee. But I've gotten into that. It's bad. Like when I go in, like I'll get upset. Like I try to be like, I'm grounded. I'm the same guy I was. And then I went in and they were out of Ethiopian and I was like, fuck this place. I guess I have changed.
No, that's a perfectly normal reaction, I think. So Mike Judge, the creator of this show, obviously the creator of Office Space, has such an incredible talent for portraying everything that sucks about working. And where does that come from?
I think it comes from living that world. So he was an engineer in the 80s and worked in offices. And I think Mike is really good at capturing subcultures.
Mm.
And I think, you know, each office, like an Office Space, gets their own subculture. I remember like that thing where somebody has a birthday and there's a birthday cake and everyone gets way too excited about it.
Yeah.
Like that whole thing.
Right.
I think Mike is such a grounded, normal dude and really has such a... I think he's a very strong anti-authority streak to him.
Yeah.
He kind of thinks every... I think he thinks every, like, system is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Every structure is ridiculous. So he's really good at capturing what it feels like to be in those while still being aware of the absurdity of the, you know, the ecosystem that you're in.
Right, right.
So I think he really likes... Like, I know he really got into this, like, male acapella championship.
Okay.
He would went. He would go and like record these videos and stuff, and talk to these like male acapella, competitions and stuff.
Yeah.
I think Mike just really likes ecosystems.
Right. Is that? Do you share that passion for acapella groups?
I don't really. I mean, you know, it's a big world.
Right.
You can do whatever you want. I don't have to see it.
Before you became this Hollywood big shot, you had a job if what I read is true, fixing laptops. Is that right?
Basically, that's right. Yeah, that's like the most basic version of it.
What's a slightly more complicated version of it?
Well, I mean, I worked at the University of Chicago for a couple of organizations that did research on Chicago public schools, and they ran charter schools and would sort of enact that research into these charter schools. And the charter schools that I worked at, there was like a middle school and there was a high school. Their whole thing was technology. So they basically... Every sixth grader had their own MacBook, or
okay.
I guess, yeah. So I had to sort of, these kids who'd never had a computer suddenly had these computers that they were banging around and, you know, pouring apple juice into, and my job was to try and keep those functioning.
So what is it about children that you hate that you turned your back on that job?
Actually, the children was the part of the job that I really actually liked. I didn't like... First of all, it's impossible to... It was just an impossible job from the beginning. There were way too many computers. I was one guy. These kids were like... You know, they're kids. They were a little reckless. The curriculum really depended on the computers working.
Right.
I just had, like... everything was stacked against me. Plus, I was really bad at the job. Like, they never had a shot.
So, did you kind of have? Was there a moment where you thought, like, I'm gonna ditch having a job to try comedy, or was it kind of like a slow rollout where you kind of naturally found your way into that?
You know, you can't make a living doing this in Chicago, so you kind of have to make like a big discrete decision to move. So for me, I've been doing stand-up comedy at night. And I was doing all the shows, the best shows in Chicago, and I realized, like, I could just do this the rest of my life, where I have a day job and do comedy at night and have it just be sort of a side thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want to quit this job, move to New York or L.A., and really see if I can actually make a career out of it? So 2007 is when I decided to sort of quit the job, and the plan was, like, I'm going to go to New York and see if I can make it as a comedian.
Was there like a kind of defining moment for you when you decided that, or was it something you had been thinking about for a long time?
It was one of those things, you know, that I was like, I'll do a couple years in Chicago and then I'll move to New York. That was always the plan. But then two turned into three, four, five, six. I believe I was there almost 6 years eventually.
Mm.
So it can be very easy to just sort of lose track of the big goal and just be on autopilot, you know. So there wasn't anything. A lot of my friends were moving away, like TJ, who's on the show with me.
Yeah.
He had moved away. I knew him from Chicago. We used to do comedy together. He'd moved away. Then my friend Pete Holmes had moved away. A lot of my friends had sort of moved away, and some of them was starting to get success. And I did this like one-man show, and that got me a manager in New York. The manager didn't really care about me or anything.
Right.
Like, I was just like a small person. They were like, all right, I'll take you on.
Right.
I basically was like, oh, now I have a manager.
Well, it just, you know, it strikes me, this seems like there's so many similarities between a comedian or actor and an entrepreneur. You got to have some tolerance for risk and just be able to, like, do what you said and kind of say now or never.
They are similar in that you really have to sort of take that leap of faith and be like, all right, this is risky and I'm probably going to fail a whole bunch of times. You just kind of have to hope that the failure to success ratio is something that you can withstand. I know my brother-in-law invented the selfie stick well before the selfie stick, and he just didn't do anything with it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he like made it and didn't do anything with it, and then the selfie stick came out and became huge. He had like a prototype and everything.
Wow. And how does he feel about the selfie stick success without him?
I think he has mixed feelings about it.
That's tough. Well, instead of ideas, maybe you could throw out a couple of just names of apps. They don't even have to have a function, just a name.
For Flirter. F-L-I-R-T-R.
Okay.
And it's like a Cyrano de Bergerac kind of thing, where if you're like talking to somebody and you can like put in what's going on and they can suggest interesting topics to you. And like fun lines. Just came up with that. And Tremble. Let's do one called Tremble. And it's like it plays scary sounds on your phone so that you don't get mugged.
Okay. like bodily noises sounds?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I guess it could be if somebody's like clearly like, if it sounds like you're pooping yourself, you're not going to get mugged, you know?
So your movie, you wrote that with your wife, right?
Yes.
And have you guys collaborated on stuff before, or was that the first time?
We've done stuff before. We used to host a podcast about video games together.
Right.
Well, it's not used to anymore. We'll bring it back. At some point, we've just been on a hiatus because we were making the movie, podcast. It's called The Indoor Kids.
Right.
And then we produced a stand-up show together that I would host with my friend Jonah Ray, and she would produce and book. And then that became a Comedy Central show for 3 seasons. So we'd worked together before this.
We
never written anything together.
So in the intensity of making a movie, is that does it make it easier if you live with your co-writer, or does it make it harder to escape each other sometimes?
Well, it was really good in this case because she's a really good writer and we have different strengths, and we'd never done anything like this before, so it was really easy for she could write something, send it to me, I'd rewrite it, send it back to her, she'd rewrite it. So by the time anybody else read it, we'd already done, like, we were like 3 drafts in, you know?
She's also
very motivated, so when we would give each other, like, sort of deadlines, she kind of kept me honest with that.
Okay.
So that was really good in that we worked really well together creatively, but then if you're also living with the person, that it can be tempting, like, at night, you're laying in bed just to be like, hey, I had this idea for this thing.
Yeah.
We had to come up with this rule where it's like, whenever you want to talk about work, you have to ask permission. So you have to be like, hey, can I say something about work? And then yes. And then so you can switch gears. It can be very easy to just sort of flow from work to personal to work. And I don't think that's healthy.
Right.
But it wasn't for us. Yeah.
So did you, who said, no, you can't talk about work more?
She did. She's like emotionally very intelligent, whereas I'm emotionally like a child. So if I think of something, I get like impatient and I want to do it right now.
Right.
Whereas she's like, it's fine, there's time, just hold off, yeah.
Are video games a big kind of stress reliever for you, or what do you get out of them?
I guess it is stress relief because I was at Sundance and I usually travel with my Xbox and I didn't this time. And while I was there, things were like, they were fun because the movie did really well, but it was still a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting stressed out, and I was like, oh, it's because I don't have my Xbox with me. So, yeah, I think they're the stress relief, but I also just really like them. Like, I think they're a really cool medium, you know? Like,
yeah.
I love movies, I love TV shows, and I love video games. I don't really see them as stress relief, I guess, any more than I see movies as stress relief, you know?
Right. Would you want to, or have you thought about developing your own game?
I'd love to. I've done voices in a couple, and there's actually a... there's a pretty big game coming out that I'm a voice in that hasn't been announced. But yeah, I'd love to write a video game or develop a video game too. I think it's a really interesting way to tell stories. Also, it can just be sort of a mindless shoot people in the face kind of thing.
Right.
Got different ways to go.
What do you think, just off the top of your head, what would be a very Kumail-esque video game that would kind of represent your life?
It wouldn't represent my life, but I wanted to do a video game where you're a werewolf and you're a human being during the day,
mm-hmm.
and people are like mean to you and stuff, and at night you become a werewolf and you have to go and kill all those people that were like shitty to you during the day.
You know, a big part of entrepreneurship is having mentors that can kind of help you along the way. Are there any mentors you've had that have figured like more prominently in your career and helping you along?
Well, you know, having Judd, you know, we've been working with Judd Apatow, who produced this movie. The first time we spoke about this movie was 2012, so that's 5 years. So Judd has really been sort of helping us through this aspect of, you know, just writing a movie and stuff. So he's been definitely like a mentor, like really, really helpful. And then before that, you know, Michael Showalter, who directed the movie, he gave me my first job. So I learned a lot about like writing for TV and stuff from him. There was this guy, Eugene Merman, who when I first moved to New York sort of had me open for him on the road, and he was really, really helpful. Like, he really helped me. Do you know Eugene?
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Yeah, he was really, really helpful right in the beginning when we moved to New York and I wasn't sure what anything was. He really sort of helped me through those first few months.
Is there anything, you know, that Judd may have told you along the way that, you know, kind of stands out as, not exactly like a mantra, but, you know, something that you always think about that maybe he told you that you have to remind yourself of or anything like that?
Well, one thing that really helped was just him having the confidence in me that I could do it. Allowed me to think I could do it, where I was like, oh, he's like a big deal. He's like a big deal, and if he thinks I can do it, then he's probably right. He's
right
about that. So that was really helpful, and just his process for writing is really good, which is sort of to take the pressure off yourself when you're writing. So you don't have to really write anything good, you just have to write.
Uh-huh.
And for me, that really cleared a lot of like writer's block for me.
Right.
In writing jokes or movies, because I would be like, oh man, I have to write something good, I better be good. And it's like, you don't, you just have to write something and you can fix it later.
Right.
And to me, that's been like the most valuable lesson I've learned writing stand-up and movies and stuff, is that you just kind of want to write. Don't like judge yourself for the quality of the work.
That's cool. That's great. Now, you don't have to name names here, but those are positive experiences. Have you worked with someone who maybe you're like, I will never, I hope to God I never behave like that, or, you know, just someone who's set up like a bad culture on the set or anything like that?
Well, you hear stories, but I've truly, truly been very lucky to work with people who aren't like that. I know that's not an exciting answer, I'm sorry. I did have somebody once just leave set to go to a theme park nearby, which I thought was really crazy. People were like, oh, I guess we're not shooting anymore, because they went to the theme park nearby.
That's ballin' when you can just do that. Wow, that's something.
Well, you can't do it. You think you can do it, but you're going to have, you know, there'll be fallout. There's consequences.
Yeah, yeah. So I know, you know, you and a lot of your peers, you know, We live in an age where we came up in an age where you didn't have to wait for someone to put you on TV. There was YouTube, and there was all these different ways to kind of get yourself out there. Now, what do you think of that whole, like, the YouTube ecosystem? Are you, like, someone who looks and responds to comments? Like, how does that all play out for you?
No, I try not to look at comments. I used to, and then it got a little overwhelming. Like, I think, it can be very easy to get sucked into that, so I don't really look at YouTube comments and stuff. And I know that there's a whole world of, like, YouTube content creators, like people who are sort of really famous, but I don't know them. Every now and then I'll sort of do it, you know, incursions and like be like, all right, let's see what these like big YouTube people are about, and I'll like look up videos and stuff like that just to sort of see, because it seems like, I don't want to generalize, but the target audience for a lot of the YouTube people is fairly young.
Right.
Like people under the age of 16. But you still want to know what those people are watching, because I think it's interesting, you know? Like, sometimes sometimes you see stuff and it just makes you feel old.
right. And does it ever, like, pain you when you see something that is just horribly unfunny, but it's got, like, a billion views and people are like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing? Like, you know, because you're very funny, but you create stuff that is smart and funny as opposed to just, like, idiot stuff. So does that bother you when you see stuff that seems like a cheap laugh?
Honestly, it's hard to not be bothered by it a little bit. It's natural, but actually my friend Pete Holmes gave me this advice when I first moved to New York. He was like, the only advice I'll give you is, don't compare yourself to other people. Mm. Don't look at someone else and be like, why does that person have that? Why don't I have it? Or they don't deserve it. I deserve it.
Right.
He says that he's seen that, like, eat people from the inside.
Yeah.
And you see that all the time. So that was sort of something I decided, like, no matter what, never compare your career to someone else's career. And I do make an effort to do that, and I feel like I've been personally with myself very successful and not getting bogged down in other people's success. That said, sometimes you see something that's really stupid and has 20 million views and you're like, what? Why am I doing any of this? What does it matter?
Exactly.
I mean, think when I was like 12 or 13, the stuff I watched was for the most part awful. Like, I tried to watch a He-Man cartoon recently and I was like, oh my God, I just had like a small brain. I was just stupid.
Are there any, you know, real life entrepreneurial people or Silicon Valley people that you admire?
I don't know enough about that world really. I mean, I'll look at like, you know, people who are behind like pretty major apps and stuff, and I'll see the same names pop up, and I'm like, that is impressive that it's not just that you got lucky and you got one thing, you clearly understand this world
right.
and can predict success fairly well. I'm sure you've had a lot of failures, but you'll see the same names pop up on like a bunch of different really successful technologies, and you're like, oh, that is really impressive. Like, that's a gift.
It, you know, it always amazes me when I talk to some people who, you know, will sell their company or sell their app for $50 million or whatever it is, and then they do something else. I'm like, you're done. Like,
what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're done. Exactly. What more is there to do?
Exactly. I know you invented Facebook, but what's next? Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the strange thing with people like that. You know, they're like driven to keep topping themselves.
Right. And do you feel like that? You know, if your movie made you, turn you into George Lucas, would you stop making movies or would you just keep doing it?
I keep doing it. I'm the exact same way, where for me, once something is done, it disappears and all the glory of it, whatever, means nothing. Like, I remember I worked really hard to get on Letterman, and as soon as I did the set, I was like, that's gone, what's next?
Right.
I feel like I'm always looking to the next thing, and my wife says this too about me, where she's like, you need to not rest on your laurels or whatever, but like you need to enjoy success when you have it.
Mm.
And I really don't. For me, it's always like, all right, this is done. Now what's next? Now what's next? Like, literally, we finished working on the movie today, and I'm like, all right, what's the next movie?
Right, right, right.
It's not even close to out yet.
Are you able to, you know, you can do that with, you do that with successes. Are you able to leave, you know, things that didn't go exactly the way you wanted them in the past? Or do you dwell on things like that? Or how does that work?
No, I don't dwell on the success or the failure, really. I just sort of move on to the next thing. But I do really pour myself into whatever the thing that I'm working on is.
Mm.
So you know, it's like Silicon Valley, we're shooting right now. So that's kind of my life for like 4 or 5 months out of the year, you know. And everything else is tough. So like working on the movie while that's going on has been difficult. But, you know, those are the two big important things in my life right now. So I pour myself into the things and I kind of live and breathe those things. But then when they're done, I feel like they're a little out of my system. Obviously, you know, this movie, I want people to really, really connect with it and really love it. And I want the show, season 4, for people to love it as much or more than they've loved previous seasons. So far, I've been fairly lucky in that I've gotten to work on really good stuff that I'm proud of. Like, you know, if Silicon Valley had completely tanked, I'm sure I would have been bummed out, but luckily people have liked the show.
What about rebooting He-Man? You know, maybe you can elevate it a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like there's been like He-Man, I'd have to elevate it like more than a little bit for it to be palatable. I mean, it's a nonsense world. Like, it's sci-fi, but also fantasy,
right.
But also, like, it's also, I was always like, there's so many different races. Like, there's a guy, his name's Mosquito, and he's half mosquito, half man.
Right.
But he's from a whole race of mosquito people. And I'm like, why is his name Mosquito then?
Right.
Is everybody else's name just like Jeff and stuff? So I think there will be a lot of work to do, but I think something like that you could do well, not as a comedy, but as like an action comedy.
Right.
Do that so that it's a little bit, not a parody.
I
don't generally love parodies, but so that it's a little bit self-aware of its own ridiculousness and is funny about it.
Yeah.
I think that, man, maybe that's the next movie.
Yeah.
I'm going to write He-Man and I'm going to put jokes in it.
There you go. That's fantastic. I'll let you go soon because I know, you know, I'm taking up a lot of your time. But is there, has there been any books in your life that you've read that have really kind of like moved you and been a source of inspiration for you?
I really like Midnight's Children a lot. That book, it's just got such, it's great writing and it evokes a sense of time and place and people so well. It's like, genuinely like transports you, you know. So I try, and it's very difficult, but when I write something, or like Stephen King, I think Stephen King is very good at creating whole worlds where it doesn't just feel like stuff is happening, it feels like stuff is happening in context.
Right.
So I try, whenever I write, I try, and it's not just people doing stuff, it's people doing stuff in a world that feels real. And I'm not talking of world in the sense of fantasy or sci-fi, although that too, but just like, I feel like every movie you watch has its own world, even if it's a completely grounded movie without monsters or anything. Every movie has its own reality, and I think that's something that I try and pay attention to when I'm working on stuff, is like, what's the rhythm of this world? What are the colors of it? What does it sound like? That kind of stuff.
What's your workflow like?
Well, it's been tougher with Silicon Valley stuff when I'm shooting, but I generally write, if I'm not doing that, I write first thing in the morning. So I like to get up, make my coffee, and then sit and write first thing in the morning so that a couple of hours after I've woken up, I feel like I've already done something. And I feel like my brain works best when it's sort of in that not completely awake state, you know, where you're sort of, I feel like I judge my own ideas less when I'm first awake. Later, right. I'll be like, oh, this is stupid. But in the morning, I can just sort of write freely. And then as I wake up after a couple of hours, I feel like I've done something. And also, if you've written something in the morning, it kind of stays with you all day. So sometimes you can get more ideas or ways to tweak as the day goes. So yeah, I mean, it's tough right now because I have to be at work at 6 a.m. usually. I'm off today and I'm off tomorrow. But I decided when I moved to New York that I would write for at least 10 minutes every day. Mm. At least 10. And, you know, that obviously usually turns to longer, much longer than that.
Yeah.
But again, that's just a way of taking pressure off of myself.
Yeah.
Like, it's just 10 minutes. Just write for 10 minutes.
Right. That's great. I guess maybe as a closing, do you want to invent right now an inspirational saying that will give all our millions of readers that idea that's going to turn them into the next Mark Zuckerberg?
Oh, man. No pressure.
Yep, none.
I think don't be afraid of failure. I would say that's the biggest thing I've learned. Most people don't do anything because they're afraid they'll fail. And if you can just put that fear of failure out, that really solves so many problems. Because there's people failing all the time. There's people failing all around you. No one's going to notice your failure.
Right.
Your failure is not going to be so spectacular that, you know, people write news stories about it. Your failure will be boring.
So that's our episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Special thanks once again to Kamel Nanjiani for taking the time to talk to us. I love talking to him. Hoping you guys are watching the new season of Silicon Valley. It is amazing. So you should know that How Success Happens comes out every week. And to catch each episode, please subscribe to us at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us a review. So you can go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show, as well as episodes of all of our other great podcasts. Go to entrepreneur.com. Thanks.